Big thanks today to Kaspersky Labs for supporting Current Geek. Go to Kaspersky.com to get Kaspersky Total Security. Use Current Geek at checkout for 50% off.
I have
Current Geek! Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frogpants All-Stars, Geeks of the World, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with the one, the only, the Tom Merritt.
There's plenty of Tom Merritts.
Are there?
I'm the only one doing this show right now.
Mm. Are you? If you Google you, will I find a lot of you or just you?
Yeah, there's a Taekwondo master and there's a biology professor in England and there's a former Texas congressman.
You're running with quite the crowd. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, I should do a documentary.
Yeah. Well, let me know how that goes. I'll back it on Kickstarter. Also with us, we have somebody who we meant to have on before, had all kinds of technical problems. We have her back. Ladies and gentlemen, Melanie Wise of Artemis Motion Pictures. Welcome, Melanie.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I really, 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 really wanted to do this. So,
where are you hailing from? Are you in LA? Where are you at?
I'm in Santa Monica, so Los Angeles, yes. But
okay.
Santa Monica. I could throw a baseball.
Yeah, Tom's
right now.
Very close.
I'm like not far from Santa Monica.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll have to do coffee.
Yeah.
Go get a baseball and some coffee. Everything will be great. Well, it's good to have you here. I'm excited to learn more about what you're up to and have you along with us for the show. So thanks again for being here.
Cool. My pleasure.
Over there at the other side of things, we got Hammond Chamberlain. You know him as a frequent guest on various shows on the Frogpants Network, a podcaster in his own right, and he helps us on this show with a whole bunch of things. Hammond, what's going on?
Not much, Scott. Tom, how are things going?
Good.
Good. Man. How'd you ever get booked on this show, Hammond?
you know the right people and things just happen.
Yeah, it just fell together for you, did it?
How did that conversation go with yourself?
Yeah, real curious about that.
Well, it's funny because I felt guilty doing it after all the people I've had on, and then I'm like, oh, I really want to do this, but I really kind of feel guilty, and I'll get over it.
No, it's totally good.
No, and we actually had to goad Hammond to like, no, it's fine. You should do that. Put yourself on the show.
Absolutely. You're, of course, coming in just after the big launch of Soundography with Brian Ibbett. That's a fantastic show, and there's so much more you got going on, so we'll talk to you later about what you're doing as well. Before all of that, we have some headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering. As do many others in high public office.
Tom, take it away.
If you don't know about Adafruit Industries, you got to find out about that. Lemoore Freed has put together an amazing hacker maker community there. And one of her employees has put together the world's smallest MAME cabinets, little teeny tiny arcade cabinets that can, in fact, play any video game that you legally have a ROM for. In the demonstration, they show Pac-Man, they show Donkey Kong. It's essentially a small accessory board fitted to a Raspberry Pi Zero with a tiny color OLED display, and it's just slightly bigger than your thumbs.
Yeah, it is actually one of the coolest things ever. I'm trying to show the chat room video, and I'm having a hard time bringing it up, but tiny. And we're not talking about, like, for a while there, you could get, like, a Pac-Man and a Galaga in about this size, and they were officially licensed, and they had kind of crummy versions of the games in them. They were way watered down. This is way smaller, but ironically, way more accurate.
Yeah, this is keychain size.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Hammond, you'd buy one of these. You live here in Salt Lake. We'd get together and play this together, wouldn't we?
Oh, I would be all over these. They are two of my favorite things, classic arcade games and tiny.
Really? I wasn't aware of this. You like small
things? No, I love
things?
Like, you like things that are larger than normal. Yeah. I like things that are smaller than normal.
Mm. Let's call the whole thing off.
Well, no, I know what you're talking about. So I've mentioned on this or some other show that I'm really into like big pencils and like oversized telephones and stuff. I think that's really cool to feel like you're tiny in a bigger world. And Hammond, what you're talking about is like not dollhouse stuff, but like miniatures.
Yeah. We're just living two different separate. We're living separate versions of Gulliver.
Yeah, I like that. You're on one end of the extreme. I'm on the other. But this is definitely your kind of thing. You're going to pick one of these up?
I might. I'm it's not something that's out of the realm of possibility. I'll be honest.
All right.
Yeah. The bad news is there's not even an instruction set from them because they're kind of a hack and they're not for sale. But what they're hoping is that other people will jump in and make even more viable versions.
Also, my eyes aren't getting any younger, it turns out, and I don't want things to be smaller. I want them to be larger. So bigger phones, bigger iPads, bigger computers. That's what I need right now. Melanie,
is
this...
make Pac-Man for the vision impaired with the big print?
Can they? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. Listen, I'm not impaired yet, all right? I'm not quite there. I'm just saying microscopic letters are going to give me a little bit of trouble. Melanie, is this anything, is this something that holds any interest for you at all?
Well, yeah, I have one question, and you'll have to talk to me like I'm a six-year-old. How the hell do you play the thing if it's the size of your thumb?
Well, I had exactly the same question, and you have to look at the video. Like, this guy is able to do it somehow, but those, like, I don't think I could. Like, you have to have a skill to be able to do that.
Yeah. It looks really hard. I still can't get the video to come up for the people at home, but it's like it's small enough where you're kind of pinching the stuff. Like you're just sort of pinching the controller. I mean,
the tiniest knobs that you can kind of move back and forth. Yeah. He's actually playing Pac-Man in his demo video.
That's funny. So basically you have to have like, you know, Coke fingernails, you know, the joystick.
Yeah, that would work. Sure, why not?
It's a perfect toy for a recovery situation.
Yeah, there you go. Well,
this is a lot like a lot of the things we cover on the show. I feel like this is one of those things you do because you can, and that's really it. Like, there's no mass market for this. There's no
totally.
You know, obviously people are going to be interested in it and probably want one of their own, but there's a lot of novelty and nostalgia going on here. But I love that somebody took the time and certainly had the skill to make it work. And I'm sure he had all those ROMs legally. I'm sure of it.
So, didn't you just do a story not too long ago where some guy built a giant computer you could walk around in?
Yeah. Yep. What was that, Tom? It was like it was on your show. It was on DTNS. What was that?
Was it on DTNS or was Kirky? It on here? I can't even remember. Here. But yeah, no, a guy had used large transistors to create a room-sized computer with a microprocessor.
Oh, I know what I'm thinking of. There's other examples of this, many actually, but there was some stuff a couple of years ago that made a splash where somebody created a complete microprocessor and a functioning one in Minecraft, a slow one.
Oh, yeah,
one,
there's
and,
that too.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is, I don't know what people do with their time. Apparently make really rad things that I'm not making.
Like sequels to Mad Max, or in this case, prequels. Australia's Herald Sun says it has info that George Miller will shoot the next Mad Max movie in and around Broken Hill Studios in New South Wales as soon as later this year. The working title is allegedly Mad Max Wasteland, and the script tells the backstory of Furiosa, and apparently Charlize Theron will come back and reprise the character. All of this is unconfirmed by anybody connected to any studio, by the way.
Right.
Sounds like fanfic from Scott Johnson.
All right, let's get this out of the way now, all right? I still consider Mad Max Fury Road my favorite movie of the last decade. I love that movie. And I heard this news and I couldn't be more excited. I loved her character. I want to know more about her. I hope it isn't just how'd she lose her arm, because that's boring. But I want to know more than that. And I'm also very curious. The Mad Max movies have always had his name in them, but he's never been the core character. You think he was, but go back and watch 1, 2, and even Thunderdome. Mad Max is always just like this weird, unwitting observer. But in this case, if we're talking about backstory of a whole nother character where they have not even met yet, I don't know why his name's on this movie at all. All that aside, and assuming it's all true, and the fact that George Miller, if true, is going to be directing again, I think that guy's a mad genius. I think that movie's going to be great, and I am all kinds of thumbs up about this one. Melanie, where are you on a Mad Max sequel?
Oh, I'm right in your camp. I was incredibly pleased that it actually did so well. Last year at our second festival, one of the stunt women that we honored was the lady who did her stunts in Mad Max, Dana Grant.
Oh, wow. So you probably know a lot of, they had a lot of female characters that either did their own stunts partially or had stunt women. I'm guessing you know like most of those people in Hollywood, right?
Well, we are quickly meeting a lot of them. Yeah. No, we had a stunt panel at last year's festival that pretty much had the top female stunt performers in the world, and they'd never been gathered together. So it was like mind numbing. It was awesome.
That's super cool.
So you don't have your ear to the ground on this somehow. Like, have you noticed some of your stunt connections saying, "Oh, I have to go to Australia. No reason."
No. I haven't heard, but it's also one of those where, you know, pre-production can drag on for a very long time before people actually start leaving.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But, you know, it's also one of those where most actors have stunt doubles, and sadly, you know, many of them, they may do some stunts, but they don't do really technical stuff. And it would be production stupid if they let them do it, because if they got injured, it stops the actual production process. Whereas sadly, a stunt woman is more expendable.
Yeah. We'll probably ask you a bunch of this when we get around to talking about what you're doing these days, but I'm very curious about that side of the business. The side that we as viewers will once in a while see like an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie and go, see the scene right here. You can tell that's not him. That's totally not him. That's not his face. And you know, it's a stunt person, right? But that's about all the thought we give it. Like, we don't really think much past it. Or once in a while, somebody will come out and say, "You heard about Tom Cruise. He refuses to not do his stunts. He does them all himself." And then I think, well, all right, somebody's doing these. And then you forget about him. I'm really curious about the world of stunt people. So hold that thought, because I want to ask you more as we go along here.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's very interesting to me.
Hammond,
I was going to let you say something about Mad Max. What do you think, dude?
Well, sadly, I mostly disagree with you.
Ugh.
However, I will say that if the movie is about her and he is not in it, then maybe he's stating that Mad Max is a state of mind and not a person.
Okay. That's fine. Either way, that movie's amazing, and you know it, and I know it, and we've had this conversation before, and you know how good
it's
it is.
You just won't admit it. It's the story of what happens when you make a left turn and then turn around.
Yes, and it's the best That's one you'll it. Ever see. It's the best one you'll ever see.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I do have one nit, and the fact of it was is that most of the men were painted as evil, which pissed me off.
Yeah,
well, and painted like literally.
Yeah, that's true. Although there's something special about this particular brand of villain, where it is so ridiculously over the top Darth Vader villain, right?
There's
something in that makes my little kid sci-fi nerd just freak out. And I walked out of that movie. I walked out of that movie so excited and happy that it was made that I couldn't think of anything else. So a sequel about her, about anybody, I don't care. Just blow that world out. Show me more of the wasteland. Let's learn about where all the bullets are being made. Let's find out where all the gas is being hid. Let's have all that weirdness open, wide open for the world to see, and bring it on. And I can't wait.
Keep in mind, Max and Furiosa are on a long road trip, and all of us who've been on road trips know you have to tell stories to pass the time at some point. So my guess is Mad Max Wasteland starts with them back in the truck at some point, and it's like, "So tell me about your past, Furiosa," and then it's and the entire movie is just her retelling this, her origin story.
Oh man, I kind of hope you're right, and kind of hope
this
you're
is why I don't write movies.
Yeah,
I will say that from experience, that I personally don't have, but I am laterally connected to, they did have it right by saying that the metallic spray paints do get you higher.
Now, how would you know that, Hammond?
Yeah.
Let's just say it's a work-related knowledge.
Oh, right. Yeah. For those who don't know, Hammond spends a good deal of time in an actual jail, so he sees some stuff. He's seen some things.
And we should clarify that he works there.
Yeah, he works there. No, yeah. Thank you, Tom. I meant to make that clear, and I didn't.
A likely story.
Yeah.
Rolling Stone did a poll of actors, writers, producers, critics, showrunners, etc., to find out what the people who work on TV shows think are the top 100 TV shows of all time. HBO's Eastbound and Down was number 100.
Wow.
And Star Trek was at number 18. The Wire was at number 2. Should we say what got number 1 or make people read the story?
I don't know. I feel like we should spoil it. So it starts from 100, works their way down, right?
That's always how they get you to click. Exactly.
Oh, I love stuff like this. And this is, okay, hold on. I'm trying to skip to number 1. I can't do it. Do you know what number 1 is off the top of your head?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just say.
It's The Sopranos.
Is it really? Wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised by that.
I
like The Sopranos, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying.
No, and it's always
it's
the problem
Mad
with
Max,
things,
but
right?
Who likes it?
Well, listen, if Mad Max was a TV show, I know what I'd have as number one. But no, like, here's what I would have predicted. I would have predicted Breaking Bad. I might have predicted...
Number three.
Oh, is it number three?
Yeah.
I would have put the two seasons of Fargo I've seen up there somewhere.
I think they're in the top 10. I don't remember for sure.
Okay, they ought to be. They're so good. And then I would probably put Mr. Robot in there. That's a little new, maybe.
I don't remember where Mr. Robot ended up.
What about like MASH and Seinfeld and some of those...
In the top, MASH is number 16.
Mm-hmm.
And Seinfeld's in the top 10.
What about Friends?
Friends was, I just saw.
Seinfeld's number 5.
Where was Friends in there? Is it in there? No one ever told you you were going to be on this list.
Not in the top 20.
Oh, all right.
Wow.
Walking Dead 77. Let's take that. Ren and Stimpy Show 74. Anyway, it goes on and on. Now, I got to go through this. I love stuff like this. I hate lists, yeah. And I love lists.
So you guys are asking for particular show placements. What would be your number one? Do you have an idea of what you would put at the top of your ballot?
Ooh, I do.
Okay, give it.
Game of Thrones.
Okay. I'm sure this is in there, right? It's got to be in the top something, Tom. Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. No, Game of Thrones is in the top 20. It's number 12.
I would put it in my top 10. That's a good one. Hammond, what would you say?
MASH for sure, without a question.
All right, old man. It's fine. We'll put MASH in there. Not a problem. Whatever. You and I grew up watching MASH. I get it. I love MASH. I kid. For me, Tom, I'm going to say...
Gunsmoke.
It's
Bonanza.
Gunsmoke's great. But it's so hard to pick... The TV is so good right now that it's almost hard for me to remember what was great. But
DuPont Variety Hour.
I would almost put...
Please say Love Boat. I'm gonna
put it all in one, but I'm gonna say, well, of course, because it's the same show, but I'd say Fargo would be my number one.
Oh wow,
yeah, that had an impact. That and that's
risky
recent.
Too, because it has future seasons, which could bring it down in your rating.
Absolutely, but true. And I almost said Lost, because Lost really had me until the end. It had you right through the end. The Nikki and Paolo stuff didn't bother me. Like, there are parts of Lost people complain about that I didn't have a problem with. Lost was important as a hallmark moment in television history, where people would park their butts on Wednesday and then go crazy on the internet the next day. And it was just like this really living, breathing kind of thing. And it started so many careers and so many interesting things came out of it. So I feel like I want to vote for Lost for all those reasons, but I'm going to go just for pure, that show's the best. I'm giving it to Fargo. I love Fargo.
Did things like Chips and the A-Team and Rockford Files make the show, Magnum P.I.?
Hell no.
I mean, what? This list?
This list?
Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of them did.
Did they?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
TV from our era sucked.
I don't know that all the ones he just mentioned are on the list, but I definitely saw shows in that era, that vein.
So is this one on there? That's got to be in there, right? Rockford Files? I think you said that one.
I did.
I don't remember. The Twilight Zone is on here.
Oh, good.
Of course. Yeah. Any other anthology shows?
Well, yeah, I think American Horror Story is probably in here. I didn't look at all 100. I'm going to
You didn't memorize them, Tom? I'm
Cheers. Shocked. Cheers is number 20.
Happy Days.
But,
show.
Here's the thing. I would, when I first saw this, I couldn't believe The Wire was at number one, mm-hmm. in front of The Sopranos, because The Wire is a piece of work, mm-hmm. right? The more I thought about it, the more I realized what I personally would put at number one would be All in the Family.
Oh, interesting.
Because it was such a departure from its time. It was such an important part of the national conversation. And yeah. It is actually back in vogue in the current national conversation. It is proven itself to be almost timeless.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I feel silly for saying MASH.
No, don't feel silly. MASH was also of that same ilk there too.
Yeah. I'm going to make one complaint. I found Fargo. It's number 51. ER is number 50. I call foul. This list is lame. I'm no longer looking at this list.
Okay. And what about,
Gulliver's.
There was another show. Star Trek.
What? Star Trek's number. Yeah, Star Trek, the original, is number 18.
Oh, nice. That's not bad. That's really good. Columbo's on here. NYPD Blue. Buffy the Vampire Slayer at 38. South Park at 33. Friends, 26. Found it. There you go.
26. There you go.
Not bad. Right. Not bad. Veep beat it.
Go ahead. What would be interesting is
we move along to printer news, something we don't do often on Current Geek. But folks on the subreddit were very into the idea that HP printers have started to report third-party ink cartridges as missing or defective. BBC reports that an ink vendor called 123 Inked does not believe that a firmware update had been issued for these printers since March, meaning that HP had timed this, that they had put a timer in the code to say, after this point, make third-party ink cartridges not work. HP says the printers will work from third parties as long as they buy an original HP security chip from HP. 123 Inked said it's not going to do that, but it has developed compatible chips that are in production, and it thinks the problem will go away, and says this is not unusual. This happens a lot where they make changes to software, whether intentionally or not, and third-party vendors never get notified about it either way, so they have to play catch-up for a while.
Isn't it, can't we call this the original DRM? Because it kind of is, right? Printer cartridges and all that, that whole thing.
I mean, it's certainly, I don't know if it's the original, but it's one of the longest lasting versions of DRM, for sure.
Yeah, because the whole thing was, Hammond, they'd say to you, all right, buy this HP whatever DeskJet thing. I had a DeskJet 500, it was called. Color, I think. And it was cheap. Like, buy this cheap printer. It's like $80. And then every time you need to put a new big multicolor ink cartridge in it, it was going to cost me more than the actual printer cost me. And that's the scam, right? Not the scam, but that's the model.
Yeah, I think it's a scam.
Just come right out and say it. All right, it is a scam. It's a terrible scam.
It may not fit the legal definition of scam.
No.
Is what Scott
said. It's close.
Right. You could argue. You could make an argument. But my point is, like, it's always been one of the more frustrating ones. It's understandable. When music DRM was a thing, that made sense because the artists are trying to protect themselves. Labels are trying to protect the artists and themselves. And Apple or whoever is trying to protect their hardware sales, and they need to make a deal with these guys. So the way they made that deal was say, hey, we'll protect the files. I can't play anywhere else. That felt like it was multiple parties benefited from what DRM was being proposed for. I'm not saying that was great in the end. I'm just saying that's how they saw it. This thing was purely a way for HP to control aftermarket on their printers. And can you blame them? I mean, if I was HP, I would too. So as much as I complain about it, I would totally try to figure this out. Because if you sell a printer once and never again, where's your revenue?
Yeah, it's like buying fish. If you teach them how to buy their own eat cartridges, they'll print for life.
That's like the old saying, teach a fish.
That was a messed up analogy.
Yeah, teach a fish to buy his own eat cartridges and he'll print for a lifetime.
I do blame HP. I'm sorry. It's one thing. And as a consumer, I get to by not buying their products, right? Like, it's one thing to say like, oh, we think the market will work this way, so we'll build our business plan around it. It's another to then just like try to use a club to stop anyone from changing it. Like, mm-hmm. there could be a business model where people sell the printers at a higher price and give away the ink cartridges, and that might work. But it's not one that anybody is wanting to change to, because they're all used to doing it this way and being able to play this game that makes their own ink cartridges preferable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, it's not illegal, but it's certainly not nice.
Right.
Yeah, but the whole printer thing for years has pissed me off. And I swore I would never buy, a laser jet printer. And I wound up getting one to print the face of DVDs. And after that, it's like, I'm not buying this garbage. You know, I'd rather get an actual laser printer where it's a toner cartridge where you can print thousands of sheets of paper, you know, because you run 10 sheets of paper through the thing and your ink is gone. So,
And that's a great point, because you don't see these more expensive laser printers doing the same thing with their toner cartridges that the inkjets do. The inkjets just know that they can, you know,
well,
everything's disposable.
Mm-hmm. Anymore, it's like, you know, people are always looking for stuff cheap. And that's no different than going to the grocery store and you buy the economy size because it seems like the better deal. But if you actually do the math on like the cost per ounce, it's usually much more expensive. And, you know, consumers, sadly, I mean, we don't have time to pay attention to that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Also, I'd say there's like a modern day example of this in the Keurig brewer things, home coffee maker deal units. And they've got those cups. Or at least the new model has those cups with some sort of like microchip or scannable something on the cups.
It's a scannable dot that they would print on the top of their own replacements.
Yeah. And so for a while there with that model, you couldn't use third-party Keurig cups. And that sent everybody into a big uproar.
And suddenly Nespresso sales went through the roof.
Yeah. And then somebody figured out a way. It was some really easy way too. Like just put a piece of tape over it.
You just cut the ring out and stick it in there, and it's a simple little hack.
Yeah, it's like an easy hack.
Not that I know.
But no. Listen, as a guy who works in a jail, of course you wouldn't know. You would have no idea. Don't want to incriminate good old Hammond here.
Anyway. Now, that sort of thing brings up the issue of privacy. Like, should you be exposing that about Hammond or not? Hammond has said it's okay to say that he works there. But Google respects your privacy sometimes. They use an automatic face blurring algorithm to protect people's privacy in Google Street View photographs. A lane along the River Cam in Cambridge happened to catch two cows browsing. Google's algorithm blurred the face of one, but not the other. A brown Hereford is clearly recognizable, but whether that other cow is an Aberdeen Angus or a Frisian Dairy cow is impossible to tell because Google has blurred the face. Privacy is protected.
So I assume that the algorithm is better at getting human faces than cow faces, and that's what's happened?
It's meant for human faces.
All right. That's kind of awesome.
It's utterly ridiculous.
Yes, it's utter destruction, really.
Thank you for milking that joke for all it's worth.
Now we're just chewing cut about it.
Yeah, if you have a beef with our coverage of this, you can email us.
No pun intended.
Yeah. No, they're fully intended.
They're all gone. I can't find any more. Like, oh, I know. Let's hoof on over to the next set. That's bad. See, I don't have any good ones.
All right, bad. Enough of this bull.
Yeah. Well, great stories today, everybody. We get these submitted by many of you in the community over at currentgeek.reddit.com. Tom, who are some of the contributors today?
Another Jay Martin is to blame or credit for the cow story. Code Wow, Yogo Craig brought us that 100 best TV shows, D. Van Dyckel, all those folks and more submitting stories, and all of you guys voting on them helps us put the show together every week.
We like to take a little time on the show and talk to our guests about some of the stuff that they are focused on in their careers and what they're doing. I'm very curious about the world of stunt people and how Hollywood handles that stuff. And Melanie, you're right up in that stuff all the time. Tell us about what you do a little bit more.
Oh, God. Of late, running my butt off. No, we, Artemis, we do several things. We make content. We put on a film festival. And we're actually launching the very first library of content that is dedicated to badass women. So that is coming very soon. Ooh, cool. But yeah, what specifically might I be able to share with you about?
All right. So here's one for you. I'm watching Emmy coverage, right? Oh. And there's this famous, now famous, I think because of the American Ninja thing. There's American Ninja. What's it called? Is that the name of the show? American Ninja is a movie. Anyway, somebody who is her name is Jessie Graff. She is a stunt person for Supergirl and various other projects, stuff people all have seen but don't know she's there. She ends up just creaming it on this show, American Ninja Warrior. And at the Emmys on the red carpet, she does this like incredible backflip thing. And I saw the video of this and went, oh my gosh, my back hurt watching it. I thought, I'm never going to be in shape again. It doesn't matter how good a shape I'm in, she'll always exist, right? She's just better than me in every way. And you said that there's actually a story behind this and how sort of the media or the entertainment media reacted to seeing her do this.
Yeah, no, they asked her about her dress.
Really?
You know,
They didn't ask her, what do you do to be in the shape you're in? What kind of workout schedule is it like? What does a stunt person have to do to make it in this world? None of that.
No. And here's my favorite part of the article is like, you know, and you could see her very toned legs. This woman is not toned. She is shredded. And she's, you know, I mean, she blew through American Ninja Warrior. She made some of the best times over men. You know, I mean, she set not records for women. She set records for the actual competition. And I don't remember how many seasons it's on, but the way they describe her as this kind of fit, you know, sort of athletic person is like, she did a back handspring in an evening gown and 6-inch heels.
Yeah.
So it's like, and they kind of made light of it. You know, the fact that they ask her about her dress and not what she does, I think is, it's quite a statement, actually.
So being involved in that world and in that business, that must have just driven you nuts to hear that. It's like if a doctor watching a poorly made medical drama, or anybody else trying to sort of commentate on something they don't really understand.
There is that, but you know, it's one of those where I grew up working in a lot of industries that were male dominated. I was raised by my father, not my mother. And I grew up on a farm, you know, so I pitched hay bales and watermelons and I shoveled horse shit. But the bottom line of it is that I never really went out into the world and felt like there was a glass ceiling for women until I started, you know, in the entertainment world. And, you know, it's really infuriating. Yeah. It's one of those where it's like, if you spend too much time on it, you know, one of two things happen. You're going to get depressed or you're going to wish for a set of testicles. So,
well, they're kind of our Death Star. So
they're the exhaust ports.
Yeah. You don't want them. They'll hurt. Well,
it sounds like one of the things you're doing with Artemis Films is to try to positively combat that by saying, hey, let's look at these amazing things that people are doing who happen to be women.
Absolutely. We are the only film festival in the world that is focused specifically on women in action. And this year we actually expanded our submissions to also include, you know, women of action, like your social activists and, you know, because there's a lot of corners of strength, you know, but most film festivals that do focus on women, they focus on women that direct, you know, but they're, and what's interesting is that, first of all, I never would have limited it to just female directors, but the bottom line of it is it's generally men that direct women in action. And action it's not nearly important enough, so people ignore it. Mm.
Well, it sounds like a good time. Where can people find more of your work online? Good website someplace?
Yeah, ArtemisMotionPictures.com or ArtemisFilmFestival.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook as well. Same name.
Nice.
Hammond,
Chamberlain over there. How's it going, buddy?
Good. How are you?
You have more hands and more podcast cookie jars these days than I can count.
I'm just trying to be more like Scott and Tom.
Well, all right then. So good luck with that. And also drink lots of water, I guess, is my only advice. Tell us more about what you got going on lately.
So Beyond the Playlist is still alive and kicking. I'm approaching 3 years and 200 episodes.
Wow.
And pretty good. Soundography episode 6 will be coming out Monday. And that could be, probably might be one of our more controversial episodes because some of the opinions we talk about with the band we chose. Mm. And then I'm booking with you guys.
What band?
Yeah, what band?
Iron Maiden.
Oh.
I love Iron Maiden.
Yeah, Run for the Hills, man.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
When you listen to 32 albums in the course of 2 weeks, happens.
Listen, you've got Mad Max. Now you've got a Mad Max shaped scar on your face, and now you got a Iron Maiden shaped scar on your face. What's the third shoe to drop today? I wonder. Anyway, go ahead.
And then I book with you guys and show up on random shows on occasion, like Chord Killers and Citadel Cafe. And I helped out with Dragon Con this year, which was great.
Yeah. Always around somewhere. We'll see your face at Nerdtacular 2017. I'm certain of that.
I'm allowed.
Oh, of course you're allowed. He's one of the best. He's one of our best helpers there. Well, awesome. Where can people find your stuff online?
Go to soundography.com for soundography and jhammondc.com for pretty much everything else.
And you can find them on Twitter, of course, as well. All right. Well done, everybody. Hey, real quick, want to tell people at home, if you haven't done it now, you should. I just got mine in the mail, so I know what's in this thing this month. The Frog Pants Crate Joy just came in at frogpants.cratejoy.com. What is it? It's like a box of cool stuff. There are prints in there, membership cards, stuff you can't get anywhere else. We have a phone charger in there this month that says Current Geek on it, and you can plug any phone in that has a USB charger into it and charge it on the go while you're out and away from a wall outlet or whatever. That's in there. There's like one of those titanium wallet things that protects your credit cards from getting hacked when you're at the airport or when you're using it in a weird place. There it is. Look, Hammond's got his. All kinds of cool stuff. Some prints and art I made this month. We're very proud of that box, and I know you guys will like it. Go check it out. It's how we support this show. Go ahead.
There are two albums in there, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Look, there's even a little Beyond the Playlist coin.
Oh, look at that.
Little poker chip thing.
Yeah. It's pretty rad.
Yeah, I didn't
rad.
Get one of those.
Yeah, we're.
I'm getting one of those.
Yeah. Hammond just not as cool as the rest of us. No, it's a super cool deal, and I think people, well, everyone who's gotten it loves it, and I know you will too if you haven't checked it out. Frogpants.cratejoy.com is where to go and get yours coming to you today. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, why, it's the pop quiz, so stay tuned. All right, everybody, listen, I'm here to tell you that the web can be a scary place. You know, you've been there. You've been on the internet, right? There's stuff there. Things to be worried about. Security to be had or lost if you're not careful. Kaspersky Lab. They protect people from real threats of cybercrime. Their internet security software has participated in more independent tests, won more awards, and placed first more times than any other internet security company. 400 million users around this earth. Trust Kaspersky Lab to protect their banking, browsing, shopping, social networks, all that stuff from dangerous online threats. They are providing a special offer right now for 50% off their premium software, Kaspersky Total Security. It gives you online protection when you're on a PC, phone, tablet, wherever, to protect your banking, browsing, and so on. All the online threats covered by Kaspersky.com. Use the code CURRENTGEEK at checkout and get 50% off Kaspersky Total Security. And thanks. It's time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right, time for what we call here on the show, the pop quiz. It's where we ask our guests in areas of their expertise a series of questions, if I can get that word out. And they answer it in the best way they know how. If they get answers right, if they get them wrong, Tom keeps score the whole time. It's super weird scoring, so don't get too worried if you feel like you're losing. You might win in the end. We're going to start with Melanie. We'll do yours first. How do you feel about that? Y'all ready? Good? You comfortable?
I'll be the first victim. Go ahead.
All right. Your topic is female action star trivia.
Awesome.
Seems like should have picked an area of her expertise.
Seems like the perfect
Watch
one to me.
Watch me fail this and really suck, right?
That's always the problem, isn't it?
This happens. It happens all the time, so don't worry. All right, here you go. And you win nothing, so there's really nothing at stake here. Who played, first question, who played Lorna Cole in Lethal Weapon 3 and 4?
What?
Jeez, Ice Worm? He's like dives right to the most obscure areas of action.
Yeah, Mike Ice Worm Boyd does our questions, and they are often weirdly difficult.
Hang on, huh?
You can take a wild guess if you'd rather.
I couldn't even hazard, to be honest with you.
All right.
Yay!
The correct answer is Renee Russo.
Awesome.
Next question. Who played?
Oh, wait, I actually knew that.
Oh, all right. We'll see. Hey,
no, we'll give you a half point then.
We'll give you a half point because you know.
I didn't pull it up in my head. I thought it was actually you were asking for the stunt person. And I was like, ugh.
Oh, okay.
We'll definitely give you a half
point. Yeah, definitely half point there. No problem. All right. Who played Red Sonja in the 1985 film of the same name? I knew this one, but I don't know.
Wasn't that Brigitte Nielsen?
You are correct. Well done. That is correct. Nice job. That's full point, right, Tom? We're good there?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh, absolutely.
Next question. Linda Hamilton is best known as playing Sarah Connor. What was the first film she was in? Meaning Linda Hamilton, not Sarah Connor. But so the question should be, what is Linda Hamilton's first movie?
Oh. I don't think I'm pretty sure it was not Terminator 1.
I believe you are correct about that.
But no, I'm not. You're right over my head. And I love her.
She's great. The correct answer is Night Flowers from 1979. Never heard of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who has?
I'm sure it's existed, but I
quarter
didn't.
Point for knowing you wouldn't know the answer.
So we know you like Game of Thrones. Here's a question that may help that. What character does Lena Headey or Hetty? I always say Headey. Hetty play in the 2012. Sorry. That is a long year. The 2012 film Dread. So they made that remake of Dread. It's fantastic.
Oh, right.
Lena Headey, who plays Cersei Lannister on Game of Thrones, was in it. What was the name of the character she played?
Okay, can I just like have the gun now?
Alternatively, you could tell us what character Lena Headey plays in the 2012 film.
Yeah, that would work. Either one. We're not there yet, but, you know, with a little imagination.
I'm sure a film will be made in 2012.
Any name.
You can even make it up. I was trying to think of something funny, but it's just like, I think I might be even out of jokes. It's got to be, you know, something like, you know, that's zipped up tight and, you know, revealing.
I think she was.
They usually are.
Yeah, they usually are.
The that answer was my nickname in high school.
Was zipped up and tight? I know. That was my wrestling name.
Zipped up tight and revealing, Chamberlain.
Mama was her name. Mama.
Mama.
She was awesome in that. All right. How many Resident Evil movies has Mila Jovovich starred in? This does not count the yet-to-be-released Resident Evil The Final Chapter movie, so everything previous to that.
I believe it's 5.
Let's check. The correct answer is 5. Well done. They are Resident Evil, Resident Evil Apocalypse, Extinction, Afterlife, and Retribution. All of them kind of bad. Well done. You did good, actually. You did really well.
But equally, all of them kind of good.
Yeah. I don't know about all of them, Hammond. Some of them. I'll give you that. Maybe the first one. First one's all right. All right. We are going to now throw it over to Hammond Chamberlain. His area of expertise is Dream Theater. The band Dream Theater. You ready?
Oh.
Not a place where you'd watch a dream on a screen.
Not the movies I see every night when I go to sleep.
Not those. Not Tom's Dream Theater. Here's your first question. What year was Dream Theater founded?
Founded?
Yeah.
Or first album. Founded, 85.
You are correct. Well done.
Oh, God.
He's off.
Actually, I think he's going to get a quarter point deficiency for hesitating there and questioning.
All right. I see how this is going to go. Next one. What did the band call themselves prior to being known as Dream Theater?
That would be Majesty.
That is correct. Man, you do know your Dream Theater. Jeez. What is the name of the Dream Theater's debut studio album?
When Dream and Day Unite.
You really like this band. What's up with that? I mean, they're all right and all. All right, next question. How many studio albums has Dream Theater released?
When Dream and Day Unite, Images and Words. No. I think they're at 11 now.
You are incorrect. The correct answer is 13.
Oh.
Tom, also a quarter point deficiency for using your hands.
That's almost as bad as Google in Tom's rules. Final question. At what college was Dream Theater founded in 1985?
Berklee School of Music.
Oh, where though?
Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay, you got it right.
Yeah, he didn't. He should have said that originally, so it's only a quarter point.
All right, now that we've done this part, Tom adds it all up and tells us who won. Tom,
all right, looking
do?
At all of the bonuses and deficiencies, we end up with a tie score of 2.75.
Wow, who would have thunk it? Well done, everybody. Nicely done. Thanks for playing, as always. It's time for forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right. Not sure who wrote this, but I'll bet it was Melanie. I think it looks...
Yeah, it was.
So here's what we do. We do this thing where we predict the future. It's called forecast. And sometimes it's in technology. Sometimes it's in entertainment. Sometimes it's science fiction. Sometimes it's just totally out there. Like, how many more albums will Dream Theater make before we're all dead? I don't know. Maybe Hammond would know.
Endless numbers.
Yes. But instead, today we're going to talk about this prediction, which is the world of entertainment will be ruled by women still thinking on the chance... What? Still.
Oh, don't read the rest of it.
Yeah, the rest of it. You should have read this before the show.
Gotcha. All right. The world of entertainment will be ruled by women. Now, I'm going to say, before we even begin this, I'm a lucky guy in that my household is a far better place because Kim is queen. Okay? Without Kim and her leadership in my life, I would be, I don't know, eating... Otter Pops in a gutter somewhere.
You'd like be eating at Denny's with me.
Yeah.
We actually put this to the test when I was at the visit.
Yeah, we did this in April. We actually proved it. But also, and it isn't just the cooking, all right? I want to make that clear. It's everything. Everyone always says, your kids are so great. How'd they turn out so great? Don't look at me, man. I have very little to do with how awesome my kids are. It's because she's amazing. So I have no problem with this idea. Like this idea that you could take entertainment, flip it around a little bit, and get some executives in there where we have a different ratio of women to men. What do you base your forecast on, Melanie? I'm very curious.
Well, pretty much everything that we're doing is just the same old hashed crap. You know, at some point, it's hitting its limit already. Did you know that the film was actually founded when the birth of film actually happened, most of the directors were women. And I mean, there was actually way back, I don't remember the year, but Mary Pickford headed her own studio.
Oh, wow. So we're talking like silent era stuff you're talking about, like way back.
Yeah. No, it was one of those where there was more prestige in the theater. So the men, turned their nose up at directing jobs. And the women actually were the ones that made it work. And then once they made it work, the tables turned. But no, I think we're headed back there because we're at such a tipping point. And, things like having a female president, I think these things affect our perception of the positions that women can hold. And the idea that a woman shouldn't hold these positions because somehow we're inferior, I just think is archaic.
Yeah.
I look back at my own childhood, and in my high school, the women students were always better than the male students at math. I grew up thinking that, oh, women are usually just better at math than men, because that was the norm in my little bubble in Southern Illinois. And when I got to college and people were saying things about, well, women aren't good at math, I was stunned. I didn't get it. I didn't understand how that could possibly have happened. And it was just this weird statistical anomaly that had led me to think, well, that's the norm for everything. And what I found out, which is, I think, obvious, is that, hey, it's not a sex-linked trait, right? Some people are good at math and some aren't. And you're going to have statistical variation around things. And I think what you're predicting is definitely going to be, the way I would describe it is, there will be a point where maybe somebody will make a joke about women being nominated for a lot of things, and it just will fall flat, and there will be incomprehension because people will say, well, yeah, why would that matter? Why would that, a director, editor, what, a cinematographer, of course there are women, men, and others nominated.
Yeah. Don't we have to get past this stage of like, it's newsworthy to say, they're rebooting the Ocean's 11 series with an all-women cast, or they'll say things like, they're doing a new Magnum PI show. Hey, Hammond, there's some good news for you, buddy. Hammond, you like the Magnum PI, right? Big fan.
I love the Magnum PI.
All right, so they're doing a reboot of that, and it's going to star the character Magnum will be the daughter of that he actually had in the original show, two or three episodes. He had a daughter who he got custody of. Anyway, she's going to be the new Magnum PI, take over the detective firm and live in Hawaii and do that whole thing. And one of these days, it's not going to be news anymore to say, can you believe it's a woman in the main role that used to be a man there? You know what I'm saying? Like, part of it is, oh, that's good. Great. I'm excited to have that. And on the other hand, I'm like, do you have to like point it out every time in a way that makes it seem like it's so unusual? I wish we were past that point. I wish it was just normal now.
One of the places where this has been happening is in music, and especially in metal, because there's bands like Hailstrom that have Lizzie Fording fronting them. Nightwish has a female lead singer, and they're not saying female fronted band anymore. They're just calling them a band. Jackie LaPonce is part of Mushroomhead, and she has her own band, Unsaid Fate. And these are women who are leading bands, and they're no longer saying female fronted metal band. They're just calling it a metal band because it's all the I don't want to say paradigm, but I have to, is starting to shift to just accept it as this is someone who's singing and playing in a hard rock band.
It just bugs me that we're in 2016 and it still surprises us, or we still think it's headlines to do that, and it must be because it's still a problem. I mean, Melanie, you probably see it more than anybody, but is it getting easier? Is it getting better? Like, where are we at in the trajectory of things?
Can I bore you with a little history?
Yeah, I'd love a little history.
Okay, so if you go back to any era of time, and you're going to find women rulers, leaders, I mean, just women that were not just sitting in the seat of power, but who were physically powerful. I mean, you've got women warriors in every era of time. They're actually like coming to the point of like, they've actually proved that the Amazons aren't a legend. They actually existed. And it's one of those things. It's a very unknown point, is that where women hunted and went to war alongside their menfolk, they actually had much, much greater civil equality or societal equality. And so one of the things that I think is a huge persistent allusion to actually having made a larger dent in the gender thing is the fact that women's history is a very lost history, even unto women themselves. They don't even know. Mm. And, you know, we get things. I spent a lot of years teaching fitness instruction in injury rehab. And one of the things that's mind-numbing to me is this fallacy that men are stronger than women, you know, because pound for pound, many women are stronger than men. They have more endurance, they have higher pain thresholds. And, you know, so this idea that women are this weaker sex and this delicate little flower, I've never seen that ever.
Yeah. Me neither. My wife could kick my ass.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's here's the most obvious thing to me. It's like, you want to see a weaker sex, go threaten some woman's child.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, cause you're going to see her turn into a bear really quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's astounding to me that, you know, throughout any age or history of time, where one of the reasons why it's kind of fresh in my mind is because we're actually gearing up to do the Kick-Ass Academy, but one segment of our one day thing is essentially warrior women history. And literally every period of time has warrior women are prominent. Mm. Yeah. What? And nobody knows.
Yeah. Well, let's all get out there and know more. That's what I say. Let's change history for the better. Hey, one thing we do on the show is read emails. We got one from came to us at currentgeek@gmail.com from somebody named Crankshafts, with the S is a Z here. So he's super edgy and cool. All right. So it's Crankshafts. Anyway, says this. What kinds of music makes you guys relax more than any other? Now, you hold on there, Dream Theater Hammond, for just a second while we answer this question. Okay. I'm going to come around to you last because I'm guessing you're going to say Dream Theater. Here's my answer to this. When I am having a stressful day, or I've got to get stuff done, or I need focus, and I gave a little hint to the live chat before we started today, I turn on some old 1940s big band crooner era music. Gets me every time. When I was a teenager, that was my grandma's music, and I could care less about it and didn't want to go near it. But something flipped for me probably 15 years ago where it's the most comforting food I can eat musically. And I just can turn it up, crank it up, and have, you know, I don't care who it is either. It can be Frank Sinatra. It can be anybody from the Rat Pack. It can be Tony Bennett, whatever. Crank it up, fill the house. Everything's better with crooner music for me. And I don't really know why. I don't have an explanation, but I just really like it. Tom, what do you lean on?
Well, if I'm just looking for genre, I will go jazz. I will go 50s, 60s era, bebop, like Coltrane, Duke Ellington. I will go to jazz. Although I also have a big appreciation and love of the swing and the big band as well. And sometimes my jazz stations, you know, on Pandora or whatever will include that as well. For just like, I want to listen to music that I know I'm going to like and is going to make me feel better. I actually curate a playlist. I've done it for like 15 years now, where I just add and remove music as I use it, that I know like each song on here is going to make me feel good. And it's, you know, most recently I added Come and Get Your Love after Guardians of the Galaxy came out, but I've also got like the Specials on there and Woody Guthrie and some Willie Nelson and the Four Seasons. It's all over the place. I even have some Jesse J on there.
Wow. Well, you're very comforted then when you need it. You got all you need. So Melanie, what do you do? What do you listen to? Oh.
I'm a rock and roll girl.
I knew you were going to say that because if you like Iron Maiden already.
I love Iron Maiden.
I do too. I love some good metal and stuff. It's good.
Yeah. Well, Iron Maiden just makes me laugh.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, good. You're getting both your musical and your comedy out of one shot. That's good.
So, yeah, I don't know. Music is actually one of my absolute loves. It's probably my first love in life is music. So, but you know, I will listen to rock and roll from, you know, all 60s through present day. Although I have to say, I mean, present day music is just damn boring.
Well, there's some of it. You just got to dig for it, right? Like it's a little trickier to get because there's such a sea of everything and you got to like narrow it down.
Yeah, but I mean, with all of the radio stations being very corporate, you know, it's very narrow.
Oh, playlist. Yeah. It's bad now. Yeah. Like regular radio, forget it. But if you're getting stuff on streaming services or something, you're probably in better shape. Hammond, where are you at with what do you listen to?
It's all actually, if I'm having a really rough day, the thing I reach for is some Michael Hedges. He's an acoustic guitar player. Mm-hmm. And they used his music in the movie August Rush.
Oh yeah, that's a good. That's a great, amazing soundtrack in that movie.
Yeah, the guitar music is his that they used. They had someone else play it. He tragically died in a car accident, like in '96 or something. Yeah. But his first two albums, Aerial Boundaries and Breakfast in the Field, are things I will reach for when I'm having a bad day.
Well, there you go. Not Dream Theater, then. I'm thrilled to hear that. all right. Well, there you go. If you want to send your own emails to us, you can currentgeek@gmail.com. That is where we take them. We like to read them and we're happy to do it. Before we go, big thanks again to our guests. Hammond, thanks so much for being with us, man.
Hey, no problem. I'm glad I could book myself.
Don't forget, tell them one more time the website they should hit.
jhammondc.com or Soundography for the good stuff I do with Brian.
And huge thanks to you for recommending that we get Melanie in here. You did a fine job on the booking. Melanie, it's great to have you. Remind folks where they can find you as well.
Well, thank you so much for having me. We're at artemisfilmfestival.com or artemismotionpictures.com.
Nice. Go check those out. I was just there. It's a fine website. You get to learn all you need to know. It was really good having you, so thank you again, and thank you again, Hammond, for being here. Tom Merritt, anything else before we go, sir?
Just a quick reminder to folks, if they love science fiction and fantasy books, you got to check out Sword and Laser, swordandlaser.com, with Veronica Belmont and myself. We discuss some news around the world of science fiction and fantasy and have a book pick every month that we read along with you. So check it out, swordandlaser.com.
That sounds fantastic.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is super cool. You should listen to that show. It's really good. That's it. We're done. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Currentgeek.com for everything else. Current Geek on Twitter. Current Geek is the place. Ace Detect and Scott Johnson as well on Twitter for me and Tom. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at the printer industry and the many ways it is battling for the right to control reuse of commercial goods, specifically the print cartridges, which often must be replaced or refilled with more ink. A news story broke last week that HP used a firmware software update on their popular printer lines to enact a time bomb for remanufactured unauthorized cartridges. In short, as of September 13th, the HP printers put up an error message which prevented further use of any unauthorized cartridge. In this regard, HP has taken a step beyond the typical of just displaying a warning by actually preventing use of remanufactured cartridges that do not come from HP itself. Granted, cartridge remanufacturers can reprogram their control chips to avoid this error, but that will take time. And in the meantime, HP will hold their printer customers hostage to buying cartridges only from them. It's a strong-handed play to protect HP's most lucrative revenue stream, and one which will probably find some consumer pushback despite being very effective. However, the HP approach is just one small part of a larger battle in this industry between the printer companies and their competitors in the cartridge industry. The most notable battle is potentially heading to the Supreme Court between Lexmark and Impression Products, a company that recycles and resells print cartridges. Here are the important facts. Lexmark sells regular cartridges at full prices with no restrictions on resale or reuse, and also return program cartridges at reduced prices in return for an agreement for the user to return the cartridges when empty. Impression buys used genuine cartridges that Lexmark sold to foreign customers, and then refills them for resale in the US. Lexmark does not like this, so their legal team filed for patent infringement against Impression. These facts have led to some interesting patent law arguments. First, Impression has argued that the original sale of the cartridges by Lexmark in foreign countries invokes the patent exhaustion doctrine and thus prevents Lexmark from preventing resale of those cartridges in the US because they already benefited from the first sale. This type of argument won a Supreme Court copyright case a couple years ago in the context of textbooks, but is contrary to prior patent case law. The Federal Circuit Court of Appeals declined to overrule that precedent, which means Lexmark can pursue impression for patent infringement despite having sold these cartridges abroad already. Second, impression has argued that the sale of a patented cartridge with restrictions on resale also invokes the patent exhaustion doctrine. However, impression is trying to overturn 25-year-old patent case law on this point, designed to protect the sale of licenses to use products instead of complete sales, and the Federal Circuit also declined to overrule these old cases. Thus, Lexmark is not subject to patent exhaustion just because it puts restrictions on some of its return program sales of patented cartridges. The differences between patent exhaustion law and copyright law may be enough for the Supreme Court to jump in and give the final word on this issue. The bottom line is, when companies need to protect a primary revenue stream like print cartridges for printer manufacturers, they will go to great legal and technical lengths to save that future money. While this may put product manufacturers and patent holders at odds with their consumers in some sense, consumers can help regulate any unfair business practices by doing business with those who follow more fair practices. And we will see if it works in the case of HP, Lexmark, and this industry over time. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.